and a second.
President, the committee substitute combines, as you know, the bonding authority under ADA with the toll bridge authority. And what the intent and what it, the section analysis explains is that it allows for the authorization of construction of the facility utilizing revenue bonds. And these will be collected from the tolls that were taken on the bridges. It's estimated, the fiscal impact, by the way, with regard to general fund is zero. It's estimated that of the $63 million annual estimated debt service on the $500 million of revenue bonds authorized in CSHB 661, that there would be sufficient revenues to cover that $63 million annual estimated annual debt.
Right.
On line 23, as I read it, it says, out of any other revenues or money that the state legislature may provide, exclusive of any state tax or license. That, in my estimation, means it could be a direct appropriation. And I am happy to hear that there is no direct appropriation this year, if that is correct. But this does not preclude a direct appropriation from any succeeding years, does it?
That is absolutely correct. Okay. I suppose consistent with any revenue, a revenue project, revenue bond project, for example, University of Alaska housing dormitory, sometimes we've had to subsidize in the past.
Are there further amendments? Senator Ray? Ray, do you wish to move third reading?
There are no amendments, Mr. President. I would move the Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill number 661, Finance, be advanced to third reading, place the final passage.
Without objection, so ordered. Secretary, read the bill.
Senate CS for CS for House Bill number 661, Finance, an act authorizing the construction of the Kinnick Arm Crossing and relating to the acquisition, construction, equipping, and maintenance of toll facilities funded by revenue bonds and providing toll collection authority.
Bill is before you for discussion, for debate. Senator Ray?
Well, Mr. President, I'd just like to remark that I would like to help the people in Anchorage maintain the downtown core. And by putting this in, I think it's going to eliminate the downtown businesses, and you're going to have nothing but strips up and down the highways. One of the most abhorrent positions that you could get into. Everybody's trying to do away with it, and you people want to go right into it. So I'm going to help you by voting no.
You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, it's an interesting comment. However, it was not the position that Senator Ray took on the Eagan Expressway when that was proposed some years ago. I appreciate his concern for our city, and we'll do everything we can to ensure the integrity of our downtown core.
Your floor, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just have a question with regard to the title of the bill, and some of the sections that are at the back of the bill don't seem to be consistent with the title, or at least included under the title.
Senator Ferguson has the floor.
Mr. President, we had the Department of Law research this bill, and they said that everything would fit under the title.
Question is, shall House Bill 661 amended by the Senate? You have the floor, Senator Fisher.
Mr. President, I would like to point out in response to those who have expressed concern that under both major portions of the bill, the ADA and the toll authority, projects are permitted only if they receive prior legislative approval. And in the case of the Kinnick-Karm crossing, there's specific language that there must be feasibility financial plans that indicate how the entire facility will be operated and run.
Mr. President?
The floor, Senator.
Either the bill is defective or the title is defective because of the bill provides for an effective date and the title does not.
Secretary, can you administratively place effective date?
No.
We can do so by amendment.
You can't amend the title of a House bill, I don't believe, sir, unless you get a resolution doing it.
Effective date clause. Senator Sackett.
Be at ease.
Senate, please come back to order. Yes. Without objection, we revert to second reading for specific amendment. Senator Ferguson.
I'd move the amendment before the body, and that would be to delete section 12 on page 21 between lines 6 and 7.
Ask unanimous consent. It's the effective date clause.
Ask unanimous consent.
Everybody turn to third reading. Effective date clause has been removed. Questions before us? Question is, you have a floor, Senator Secretary.
I have to move it to third now, sir.
I thought we had, we weren't.
I don't think we'd ever moved it, did we?
Yes, we were.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Automatically went back. Thank you very much. The board is wrong. Question before the body is, shall House Bill 661, as amended by the Senate, effective date clause removed, be adopted by the Senate? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Have all members voted that are here? Does anyone wish to change the vote? Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 18 yeas, 1 nay, and 1 absent.
Bill's been adopted. Next item on the daily calendar, House Bill 6, Senator Ray.
Give notice of my reconsideration on House Bill number 661.
Notice of reconsideration be given. Next item is House Bill 684. Secretary, read House Bill 684.
CS for House Bill number 684, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee. An act making special appropriations to the Alaska Power Authority and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee considered this bill and recommends it be replaced with an SCS Resources, and a majority do pass. Signed, Senator Fahrenkamp, Chairman, concurring, Senator Ziegler, Paul Fisher, Mulcahy, Vic Fisher, and Sturgalewski. The Finance Committee considered this bill and recommends it be replaced with an SCS Finance, with a majority do pass. Senator Bennett, co-chairman, and Senators Josephson and Vic Fisher signed no recommendation, signing due pass for Senators Mulcahy, Ferguson, Bakes, and Sackett. There are two committee substitutes. Finance had a letter of intent.
Is there a motion on committee committee? You have the floor, Senator Ferguson.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate committee substitute be adopted.
Finance Committee.
Finance Committee.
No objection. Secretary, read the bill.
Senate CS for CS for House Bill number 684, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act making special appropriations to the Alaska Power Authority and providing for an effective date. There is
a letter of intent.
There also is an amendment by Senator Vic Fisher, amendment number 1.
Amendments before us. Senator Fisher, if you wish to move an amendment.
Mr. President, it's a lengthy amendment, and I believe members need to see copies being made.
You do not have the amendment prepared?
I have prepared copies.
It's prepared, but it isn't reproduced.
Let us look
can
at
the
standees for a moment. May I have a copy of the amendment? Senator Fisher, have you proposed the amendment?
Mr. President, I move the amendment. I haven't seen it either.
We'll be at ease. I thought the amendment.
Amendment number 1 by Senator Vic Fisher on page 2, line 8, add a new section, section 7. AS 4483 is amended by adding new sections to read Sec 4483-422, reappropriation of Susitna funding. If construction has not begun on the Susitna River hydroelectric project by July 1, 1991, the appropriations made to the Power Development Fund for the Susitna River hydroelectric project are reappropriated to the Alaska Permanent Fund. Sec 4483-424, reappropriation of Bradley Lake funding. If construction has not begun on the Bradley Lake hydroelectric project by July 1, 1988, the appropriations made to the Power Development Fund for the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project are reappropriated to the Alaska Permanent Fund, renumber sections.
Do you wish to speak to your amendment? The floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I put this amendment in because there is a possibility that economic feasibility studies, that financial feasibility studies may show that one or both of these projects may not be feasible. It is also possible that despite an accumulation of $1.4 billion of state funds as a subsidy to Susitna, that a financing plan may not be realized because any financing of that facility depends principally on two factors. One is a power cost sufficiently low that the utilities in the area will sign up, sign power sales agreement, and secondly, that sufficient additional funds can be obtained through bonding, tax-free bonds, REA bonds, or other means to finance the balance of this multi-billion dollar project. As of now, there's no guarantee that either a power sales agreement will be executed or that the additional bonding authorization will be obtained by, through the U.S. Congress or private financing will be available. Mr. President, we may end up in 1989 and 1995 with $1.5 billion or more dollars sitting there in a power development fund for specific projects. And it appears to me that if we set this money aside at that point, at the stage of declining state revenues, if we haven't built the dams, if the money isn't needed for those dams, the permanent fund would be the most appropriate place to put the money for use in behalf of future needs and future generations.
You have the floor, Senator Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in opposition to the motion. I could only ask this body that we leave a little bit of work for the 16th legislature to take care of.
You have the floor, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. This amendment kind of confuses me. I would have expected an amendment to delete the continuing appropriations from our delegate to the Constitutional Convention. However, what we're doing here is taking continuing appropriations, which I think have some real constitutional problems, and then dedicating them on to something that I like if we can't do something else that I like. I would just state that as 589 has been reconsidered, I will also reconsider 684. And although I intend to vote against this amendment at this time, I would like to see us delete the continuing appropriations, and I would propose that on reconsideration, and also like to reconsider this issue then, too.
Yeah, the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, just to explain to my senator friend from Anchorage, I've been beating my chest enough on constitutional issues lately, so I figure I wouldn't tackle the continuing appropriation matter. I too am concerned about that. I just figure if we're going to do something that some people consider questionable, at least there'll be a long-term public benefit out of it.
Of course, Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, I share my fellow colleague's concern as to the appropriateness of additional money into the permanent fund. And normally I would agree with his position that as much money as we can should be put into the permanent fund at this time. On this particular issue, however, it's obvious that as this money were to build up, if the bill passes, that decision can be made at a later date. And just by putting the money into a power system, a power fund, and not having it be available for appropriation by each additional legislature, I think is a step in the right direction. But on these particular projects, if in fact they turn out to be not feasible, Mr. President, I think the decision should be made by future legislature, because there are groups, and we all know who they are, that would love to delay almost any hydroelectric project in this state through any means, be it legal means or environmental means or such. And I don't want to give them any further incentive to delay these projects.
Yeah, floor.
Mr. President, there is one other option, of course. This is a $487 million appropriation. There's a $300 million appropriation currently outstanding to the permanent fund right now. If we didn't spend as much as we're planning to spend, that appropriation could be made by the end of this fiscal year.
Senator Ray.
Through the chair to our esteemed colleague that was in the Constitutional Convention. Does he feel that, perhaps he would answer, if he feels that his reapportionment, reappropriation is as constitutional as the continuing appropriation for the Susitna River hydroelectric project?
Mr. President, I would say it is as constitutional, yes.
The question is, shall the amendment be adopted? You may proceed to vote. All members have voted. Does any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
Roll shows 4 yeas, 16 nays.
Amendment failed. Are there further amendments?
There are no other amendments.
Senator Ray?
There are no further amendments. I would move Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 684, Finance, be advanced third reading, place the final passage.
Without objection, so order the Secretary to read the bill.
Senate CS for House Bill Number 684, Finance, an Act making special appropriations to the Alaska Power Authority and providing for an effective date.
The bill is before you for discussion, for debate. Your floor, Senator.
The non-leadership member who just spoke here a few minutes ago on the continuing appropriations, I think he is absolutely correct, and I think that this has a, it really says something, one thing, and it doesn't something else. I believe if you were for this amendment and you were in the executive and you wanted the continuing appropriations, you could say, yes, we consider it is constitutional, and as long as it's appropriated, and it is required to be appropriated, et cetera. If you were opposed to it in the executive, you'd say, no, we don't consider this as constitutional, and we think this is incorrect, and so it's as it is unconstitutional, we will not enforce it. So it's just wondering who's going to be in 1991, and I don't think there's anybody here that's going to be in the executive office, but... Anyway, I hope they consider that when the date comes around.
The floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I oppose the continuing appropriation procedure, both on grounds of unconstitutionality and on grounds of poor budget policy. As I understand the Alaska Constitution, there is contemplated annual sessions. There is no distinction between appropriation or budget sessions and other sessions. It is clear, and that's been the tradition since the beginning, that there are annual appropriations. There is a line item veto power and a power of reduction in every governor. And by initiating a continuing appropriation, we make a successor governor less of a governor because that governor cannot apply a veto to this item, since it has already been completely executed by the 13th Alaska Legislature. We also reduce, in a very peculiar way, the power of future legislatures. Mr. President, a legislature, through majority will of each House, has the ability to act affirmatively by appropriation and subject to concurrence by the governor, overriding the governor, to spend money. It also has the negative power by a majority vote to refrain from spending money. But under this approach, we deny the majority in the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th legislatures the opportunity to refrain from spending, because if the governor wants to spend and that majority does not, they are powerless to stop it. They need, in effect, to have 45 of their numbers instead of a majority in each House to deal with that problem. And I think we diminish the legislature as well as the executive in different ways by going on this kind of procedure. I'd also like to point out, Mr. President, that in the federal government, where the Congress is having tremendous budgetary problems, we all know what has happened. Over the years, there's been encrusted onto that budget process entitlement programs, vestiges from prior Congresses that cannot be dealt with. The part of that budget which the Congress can deal with is only a small part of the budget. People wonder, and I have to say this in all candor, people wonder, why did the Reagan administration lean so hard on certain poverty programs? Very frankly, Mr. President, I have to concede this as a Democrat, that was the only part of the budget except defense that was available to the President to lean on. The rest of it was all in entitlements that could not be touched. Now, we cannot have a deficit spending budget in this legislature by constitution, but we're going to be putting future legislatures in that kind of a bind. Now, there, of course, Mr. President, you know, there's some very interesting possibilities that can arise under this. It would be possible if we were in the 14th legislature and we were about to adjourn, and we anticipated that a governor was going probably to take office who had a philosophy very different from that of the majority of this House and the other House, to simply say we're going to cover that situation by pre-appropriating money, which Governor Sheffield won't object to, but his likely successor would if that governor were there to make the veto, but he won't be there to make the veto because we're going to take care of it in advance. I think it's just a very mischievous and irresponsible thing to do. Now, it's going to be argued, maybe, that, well, we've already done this before. I don't know about that. I wasn't here if it was done before, but I think it was really not done before, in fact. There was an appropriation for appropriations to the permanent fund that were not deposited in 1 year, but as I understand it, when the legislature did that, the state of mind in the legislature was that there was enough money in the budget to make all of the deposit referred to at one time. And then there was a very sudden decline in oil prices, and that situation changed after the legislature adjourned. There may be references also to revolving loan programs. But Mr. President, those are not programs which one legislature says will be augmented in future legislatures without action of the future legislatures. Those are appropriations which are placed in being one time and are intended to revolve as proceeds are collected. I think we really have to take a stand for fiscal responsibility and for the Constitution and say no to the continuing appropriations. And if the bill passes with the continuing appropriations and the senator from Eagle River offers his amendment tomorrow, I will support that amendment.
The floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I have been in this body for 2 years now and have listened to the senator from downtown Anchorage on many occasions, and he's finally gotten to me. His arguments are compelling. I'm trying to figure out what it was that caused me to see the light, and I think it was probably his ringing defense of the Reagan administration that brought me over. So I think he's right on point, I think.
The floor, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just one additional point, I think. It's too bad that it seems consistent with the recent government experience, but what we've got here is a $487 million solution to a $200 million problem. I think it's a bad trade for the Susitna Clause, and I think the additional funds will be vetoed out anyway.
I'm ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 684 be adopted? You may proceed to vote. All members voted. Does any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 10 yeas, 10 nays.
Bill has failed. Senator Ray.
Give my notice of reconsideration of Senate Bill, Senate Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, Cross Bill Number 634.
Consideration has been given. The next item on the daily calendar is House Bill 720. Secretary, read House Bill 720.
House Bill Number 720, amended by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to minimum electrical standards. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered this bill and recommends due pass. Signed, Senator Elias and Chairman, concurring Senators Rohde and Pettyjohn.
Are there amendments?
There are no amendments.
Absolute absence of amendments.
In the absolute absence of amendments. I move House Bill Number 720 is amended. The advance of third reading in place of final passage.
Without objection, so ordered. Secretary, read the bill.
House Bill Number 720, amended, an act relating to minimum electrical standards.
The bill is before you for discussion, for debate. Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Bill 720 be adopted by the Senate? You may proceed to motion. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 20 yeas.
Bill has been adopted. Next item on the daily calendar is House Bill 512. Secretary, read House Bill 512. Title off the committee report.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 512, financed by the Finance Committee. An act establishing the Alaska Railroad Corporation to manage and operate the Alaska Railroad and providing for an effective date. The Transportation Committee considered this bill and recommends it be replaced with an SCS transportation and a majority do pass, signed Senator Moss, Chairman, concurring Senators Krutula, Bakes, and Fahrenkamp. Senator Gilman signed no recommendation until constitutional amendments decided on. The Finance Committee considered this bill and recommends SCS finance with a majority do pass, a letter of intent, and fiscal notes. Senator Bennett, co-chairman, and Senators Fakes, Ferguson, and Sackett signed do pass. Senators Josephson, Mulcahy, and Vic Fisher signed no recommendation. There are two Senate committee substitutes.
Is there a motion on the committee substitute, the Finance Committee substitute? Who's chairperson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of Senate CS for CS for House Bill 512 Finance.
Without objection. Sorry, Secretary Reed.
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill number 512, financed by the Finance Committee. An act establishing the Alaska Railroad Corporation to manage and operate the Alaska Railroad and providing for an effective date.
Those before you, are there amendments?
Amendment number one by Senator Vic Fisher, page 3, lines 22 and 28.
Senator Victor Fisher.
Ms. President, the purpose of this amendment...
Do you wish to move the amendment?
Point of order. All right, Mr. President. I will move amendment number one. The purpose of this amendment is to place a railroad employee on the board. I have agreed that rather than eliminating the position on page 3, line 28, which would be an executive official of the United States Railroad, that might be more appropriate to eliminate one of the other positions, Mr. President. Therefore, I ask unanimous consent to withdraw amendment number one.
Amendment number one has been withdrawn.
There is an amendment number two.
Secretary may read amendment number two.
By Senators Hallford and Vic Fisher, page 3, line 22, and page 4, line 6. This is a written amendment, and I think it's been distributed.
Amendment has been distributed, Senator Hallford.
Mr. President, I move amendment number 2.
Are there amendments on the desk? Do we have the amendments? There are. Amendments will be delivered.
I have 7 amendments. Do you have 7?
For sanity. Please come back to order. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, amendment number 2 places a representative of one of the employee organizations representing the union on the board in place of one of the two members with the least experience as owners managers of a business in Alaska. I ask unanimous consent.
I object just for one. How many bargaining units do they have? 5?
6.
And we're just going to make it broad enough. The amendment makes it broad enough through the chair.
Anyone the bargaining units, but only one. Is there debate on the proposed amendment? Senator Sackett left us for just a moment and asked to be at ease. I hesitate to continue on.
He requested call of the House in the event of a vote.
Right.
I call the Senate.
All right. There is a call to the House on this amendment. Before us is Amendment 2. Call of the House has been satisfied. There is not debate. The question is, shall Amendment 2 be adopted? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the vote.
The roll shows 19 yeas, 1 nay.
Amendment 2 has been adopted.
There's an amendment number 3 by the Transportation Committee. It begins page 1,
amendment
page 7,
on every desk.
Page 7, 8, and 8.
You wish to move this amendment?
I'd move the amendment.
Amendment's moved. You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, basically these are technical amendments to the bill as a whole. They are, as you note, 11 different specific amendments. I would note that on the number 5, where it says "receive for a service that is not self-sustaining," where that word should be "were." So, if I might be permitted to amend the amendment in that particular case, there, I would so move.
It's recognized that there can be a word change amendment that can be just done by the Secretary of the Senate without motion.
This is essentially what this is, to clean up some technical errors and deletions and so forth, Mr. President.
Is there a debate? Question before you, shall Amendment 3 be adopted? Senator Ray?
5 and 6, the last part of 5 looks very similar, part like 6. You have delete continuation for the period after subsidies, delete the S from services, and delete continuation. You look on 5. I see. Thank you.
Question is, shall Amendment 3 be adopted? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? All members voted. Does any member desire to change the vote? Secretary, close the roll.
Shows 20 yeas. There is an amendment number 4 by Senator Curtula. Beginning page 47, lines 6 through 29.
Senator Halpern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move amendment number 4.
You have the floor, Senator.
The amendment deletes all references that were contained in the bill to the constitutional amendment, renumbers the sections, and cleans up the bill from the failure of the constitutional amendment. I ask unanimous consent.
Without objection. Next item is amendment 5.
Amendment number 5 by Senator Hoffer begins page 8, line 7.
A little bit too much noise. Senator Hoffer, you have the floor.
Mr. President, I move amendment number 5.
There's an amendment to amendment number 5, which is the insertion of one word. The Secretary would read that word.
Amendment number 5 has been moved. There's amendment to the amendment proposed. You have the floor, Senator.
Amendment to amendment number 5. To the amendment offered by Senator Hallford, section 4240-385, insert transportation before purposes.
Mr. President, I move the amendment. In the legislation, in indicating the purposes of a state-owned railroad, there is very general language about fostering and promoting long-term economic growth and development. The amendment would make it clear that if eminent domain power is to be exercised, it will be not for that generalized purpose, but specifically for a transportation purpose. And I ask unanimous consent for the amendment to the amendment.
There is no objection. Amendment to the amendment is adopted. You have the floor, Senator, to your amendment.
Mr. President, the amendment does add eminent domain back into the bill. It's been in and out of the bill several times. It was taken out initially at the request of the governor through some misunderstanding in the committee. The eminent domain would apply anyway through the state's process, What this does is it gives it to the corporation, but then gives the governor a basic override. The exercise of the power of eminent domain requires the prior approval of the governor. It's not a new power, however, it works through the structure of the corporation versus the existing structure.
Yes, do you have a floor, Senator?
If I might ask a question, how is that different from the deletion of number 15 up there, exercising the power of eminent domain? I still don't understand the difference.
The section exercising the power of eminent domain is one of the powers in the section of the bill dealing with the powers, and it adds a section on eminent domain specifically, which provides the limitation that it can only be exercised with the approval of the governor.
Is there objection? You ask consent for adoption. You have floor, Senator.
Is it more, less, or equally restrictive?
More or less or equally restrictive is the question. You have floor, Senator.
I think it's the same thing. It's saying the same thing. One is the general powers of the board of the corporation, which refers back to a specific power granted by the bill. And the restriction that is in the specific power applies to the board's power.
Is there objection to unanimous consent? Amendments adopted. Next item on the daily calendar, Amendment 7. Is there 6? Excuse me. I need Amendment 6, please. Thank you so much. Amendment 6. You may read the amendment.
Amendment number 6 by Senator Josephson, page 3, line 11. Delete Commerce and Economic Development, insert Transportation and Public Facilities.
Senator Josephson.
President, I move the amendment. Mr. President, this amendment really conforms to existing law. Under AS 4442-0207, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is given a duty to manage, operate, and maintain state transportation facilities, communication facilities, and all docks, floats, breakwaters, and buildings, including all state highways, vessels, railroads, pipelines, airports, and aviation facilities. The department is also charged with the duty to study alternative means of improving transportation and communication in the state, to study existing transportation modes to determine how they might be improved or whether they should be continue to be maintained, and to plan, design, construct, and maintain all state modes of transportation and transportation facilities, and to study alternative means of transportation considering the economic, social, and environmental impacts of each alternative, and so forth. And that legislature that wrote that legislation was a wise legislature, because the idea, I think, that underlay that was that it is important to look at the modes of transportation comparatively and to study their economic and social effects and their costs and benefits in an even-handed way, so that we will get a railroad where a railroad should be, and we will get an airport where an airport should be, and we will get a road where a road should be, and a harbor where a harbor should be. That is the philosophy of the amendment, Mr. President, to conform to that dictate of our existing law and to treat even-handedly railroad matters with others. Now, in fact, the railroad would not be simply set up as a line agency. There would be a board. There would be a public corporation within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So it will be unique and it will be different. But at least it will be under the umbrella of an agency that is a transportation agency. And it will not be sitting outside of that agency, conceivably making decisions that might be great railroad decisions, but aren't necessarily good transportation decisions if we look at all the modes comparatively. So I believe that the amendment is in the public interest, and I urge the adoption of the amendment to place the railroad corporation, house the railroad corporation at the minimum, under the umbrella of the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I rise in opposition to this amendment. This amendment's an old friend. It was put, the bill, when they were introduced in both the House and the Senate, included the Commerce and Economic Development as the agency to hold this railroad corporation. The amendment was offered in House Transportation and failed. The bill passed out with the House Transportation feeling very strongly that Department of Transportation Public Facilities was not the correct place to have this railroad corporation. The amendment was offered in the House Finance Committee. Again, it failed. The amendment was offered in Senate Transportation. It failed. The amendment was offered in Senate Finance. It has failed. And a few minutes ago, John Shively of the governor's office said that even they could support the railroad in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. So with all of those folks turning down this amendment, I would hope this body would also turn down this amendment. I would also turn your attention to pages 38 and 39 of the report and recommendations of the Alaska Marine Highway Task Force, prepared for Governor Bill Sheffield and just released within the last 30 days. In there, they give three recommendations, and my colleague from downtown Anchorage, who is a proponent of this amendment, brought up the ferry system yesterday, and they said, my goodness, you know, something like this may happen to the ferry system when we were debating the constitutional amendment. And in fact, the first three recommendations, or the first recommendation on page 39 for the organization of the ferry system, is to create a purely independent public corporation to operate the Alaska Marine Highway system. That failed for the railroad. Maybe we can still do it for the ferry system. Number two is the operation and management of the ferry system to be transferred from DOTPF to an organizational structure similar to the one being considered for the Alaska Railroad in House Bill 512. And third, a continuation of present arrangement under DOTPF with a policymaking commission in its head. That's the one that they recommend the least. So I would urge this body to follow the wisdom of the four committees that have looked at this bill, to follow the wisdom of previous colleagues, and defeat this amendment. Thank you.
Well, Mr. President, let me just cover a few points. I have respect for all of those groups. In fact, the Senate Finance Committee voted this amendment down by a 4-3 vote, but one member later said that he wished he had not voted against this amendment. I hope that we will see that today. Second, Mr. President, my understanding, and I have talked to Mr. Shively very recently, is that the governor does favor the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I was going to make that argument, as a matter of fact, that not only is it an existing law, but we ought to give the administration the kind of organization it wants, because it will be accountable for the operation of the railroad in the final analysis. I think it is fair to say, and I will say, that as far as Mr. Shively was concerned, and he came to me before this afternoon session, he would have been satisfied had this amendment not been offered. But that is not on the basis of the merits, but on the basis of other conversations relating to other pieces of legislation. The Commissioner of Transportation and Public Facilities called me today, as he called others, urging that this amendment be adopted. With respect to the transfer team report on the ferry system, I do not read their report as saying that they would support placing the ferry system under the Department of Commerce. I read it as saying that it should be reorganized in some way, perhaps as a public corporation, which is being done here for the railroad. You just get down to the basic planning function, the planning question. Should we have a major mode out there by itself, or should we encourage that mode and the people who design and plan for that mode to at least have a dialogue with the other transportation planners in the state so that comparisons can be made, and so we can get the best mix of transportation modes?
Senator Halford.
Of course, I think that dialogue is provided for in the legislation. In fact, the board of this public corporation contains both the commissioners of transportation and the commissioner of commerce, and that dialogue is very necessary, and it's provided for. Commerce is a smaller organization, and I think has a better chance of operating the railroad with the minimum interference than DOT does.
Senator Pappy Moss.
I might rise also in opposition to the amendment. One of the reasons that the Transportation Committee, after some 48-50 meetings that we had officially, it seemed that the word that we got from out there, from the hitherlands, from most of the people out there in the beginning of this was, don't put this thing in the Department of Transportation. I will say this, of course, that there has been a lot of change, and I have a great deal of confidence in the new commissioner. But I still have a feeling that a lot of the people out there don't want it in the Department of Transportation. I might point out also, it's probably the largest, well, it is the largest. They got more fingers and more pies than they actually need to be in. And we really need to keep this thing in the Commerce Department, in my opinion, to help us create an entity that's going to be worthwhile and will make money in the long haul. And isn't that what commerce is all about?
Fisher, Senator Fisher.
Mr. President, I was just reading Rule 20 of the joint rules dealing with standing committees, and I see that if we place the railroad under Commerce, that in the future it will come in the jurisdiction of the Labor and Commerce Committee, and it's interesting to note that the work in both the House and Senate, the basic work on the railroad bill has been through the transportation committees.
Yeah, the floor.
Mr. President, that's not, that could be all right, but there's been a lot of bills that go to transportation because they're dealing with transportation. You have that choice.
Question? Senator.
I feel almost morally compelled to get up and talk about this ferry system advisory committee. Anybody that knows the makeup of that committee understands that, at least in the opinion of some, that the most influential members have self-enlightened interests. Some of the recommendations they come down would further their pocketbook rather than would the state.
Question.
Yes, briefly, Mr. Chairman. I think it needs to be pointed out, though, that the Department of Transportation has, what, 4,000 employees? They have numerous problems with if this, all the recommendations in this ferry system task force aren't to the good senator's liking, then there's enough pages there that I'm sure some of them are valid. I hear enough complaints about the ferry system to know that there's some justification for some of those things. We have heard over many, many hours of testimony in the Transportation Committee about the problem the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities has had with its capital projects. There are thousands and thousands of projects that they can't close out because, one, they can't find them. They don't know if they're closed out. They don't know if they're complete. All of this that they are trying to shake down and trying to figure out. So they've got their own problems there. In addition, we're not talking about a brand new entity. We're not creating something that from the beginning. We're talking about an entity that's run since 1914. It runs every day without us. I just hope it continues to run with us.
Question? Question is, shall Amendment 6 be adopted? You may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? If any member desire to change their vote, I'll change my vote. And the member desire to change their vote, Secretary close vote.
The roll shows 8 yeas, 12 nays. Amendment number 7 by Senators Josephson and Rohde, page 1, line 22, add new subsection E.
Senator Josephson, you have the floor.
Yeah, Mr. President, I move the amendment.
You may speak to the amendment.
Mr. President, this amendment is designed to ensure that the railroad does not use direct appropriations to fund a particular freight operation if it can be demonstrated that the appropriation has placed privately owned and operated carriers in an unfair competitive position. The next sentence makes clear that confidentiality of railroad contracts under 4242.20b is not affected. I won't debate this very long because I think this debate is lengthy as it is, and because this amendment is so narrowly drawn that I hope it will not be controversial. Basically, Mr. President, some of us are concerned that a subsidized railroad will have the capacity to compete unfairly with the private sector in establishing pricing practices on the freight trade. For all practical purposes, because the Interstate Commerce Commission jurisdiction by decision of the ICC exempts boxcar and flat car containerized traffic, there will not be effective regulation of rates to avoid or control possibly predatory practices through the federal agency, the ICC, nor can the state adopt an effective regulatory system through its own public utility commission or the state transportation commission, which in any event is likely to go out of existence. The only thing the state can do is declare that as a matter of its own management policy, as the owner of the railroad, it will not use direct appropriations to compete unfairly, and that is all that this amendment does. It does not cover or affect the indirect subsidies, the tax exemption, the bonding capacity, the eminent domain authority, all of that which the railroad will have. It only deals with the direct appropriations. I could speak at greater length about it, but I urge the adoption of the amendment.
Rules, Chairman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I rise in support of this amendment. In all the hearings and everything that I was privileged to participate in, no member of any committee ever wanted to use unfair subsidies to put any of the motor or water carriers out of business. The name of the game is competition, because that's the kind of thing that will get the best service for the people of Alaska, the consumers. And so I think this amendment is good. I've had it checked out with the Federal Railroad Administration in Washington, and this amendment is a good amendment and one that we would support.
Well, I just have a question to the chair. Is there any indication that the federal government ever used a direct appropriation to fund a particular freight operation?
The floor, Senator.
Through the chair, to my colleague from Juneau. Yes, there were several direct appropriations made, but through the series of tariff and rate setting procedures of the ICC, all court cases brought against the railroad under federal ownership have been ruled in the favor of the railroad. There have been no predatory pricing, there have been no unfair competition, and the structure, the way the scheduling is done through rate procedures, they have ruled every time in favor of the Alaska Railroad. I can go through all that for the body if they want. It's a direct variable cost process. I have the cost standards for railroad rates here by the ICC, but they have always ruled in favor of the Alaska Railroad, Mr. President.
The floor, Senator.
Well, all I got was a general answer, yes, sometime, somewhere, but it didn't count. And I just wondered if there was perhaps why the, what need is this if the federal government didn't use the direct appropriation out, and they understood that they would be putting other carriers in unfair competitive positions. Why would we believe the state would?
You have the floor, Senator Joseph, and somebody.
Mr. President, as Senator Fakes has said, the concern of the private sector may not be well-founded, and we may, in fact, find no occasion on which this will be a problem. But one of the underlying themes, at least by some proponents of the railroad, is that the railroad will be playing a greater and greater role in the economic development of the state. The fiscal notes that were discussed in the Finance Committee indicated that the railroad anticipates greater and greater revenues. And whatever the federal practice was, we just want to be sure that the state does not play an ignoble role vis-a-vis the private sector. As I said, the ICC remedies are extremely difficult under the deregulation philosophy of the Staggers Act. One would have to show the dominant role of the railroad in that line of commerce as a threshold showing to even talk to the ICC. The private sector does believe that this is a helpful amendment, and the people concerned with the railroad transfer for the state, Mr. Hickey and others, do not believe that the amendment is at all harmful.
What I'm looking for is information, and I wonder, then again, with the rosy outlook of the railroad, that already the finance committees are adding up all the extra dollars that the railroad's going to make, so we're going to be able to appropriate that in the next, probably starting next year, we'll have $300-400 million over and above to take care of all this stuff. And I just wonder why, if there isn't any problem, we're fixing something here that is not broken, but we're waiting to see if perhaps it will get broken, and I don't, it doesn't seem rational right yet.
Opposed, Chairman.
Mr. President, the good senator from Juneau is exactly right. It's not broken, but this doesn't hurt it. So why not accept it in the spirit of compromise?
Question is, shall Amendment 7 be adopted? You may proceed to vote. Any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the
vote. Roll shows 20 yeas.
Amendment's adopted. Next item on.
Amendment number 8 by Senator Rohde, page 44, line 11, insert a new subsection C.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, everyone has assured me that the corporation is subject to the Antitrust Act. This amendment would ensure that...
Point of order.
I'm sorry. I move amendment number 8.
Of course.
This would ensure that the corporation is subject to the Antitrust Act.
You, of course, sir.
Okay, this one would hurt. I rise in opposition to this amendment, Mr. President, because it is not necessary, but it would hurt because it would put an extra layer of regulations on the railroad that the federal transfer legislation didn't do. And in the federal transfer legislation, it specifically says that all antitrust laws of the federal government will apply to this railroad. So why give it an extra layer of regulations and bureaucracy that are not necessary? Because the antitrust laws of the federal government totally cover this railroad, as do all the laws and regulations of the Interstate Commerce Commission. I tell you what this one will do. This will be the legal defense fund for attorneys for 1984. Because this will open up our railroad to even more additional lawsuits by some of the competitors. Right now, currently, we have both the competitors have sued on antitrust statutes in both the district court in Washington, D.C., twice. Both times they've been thrown out, and I think what we do here is give them another basis for another lawsuit in district court in the state of Alaska when it's not necessary.
Of course, somebody.
Mr. President, the Antitrust Act applies to every other Alaskan. Why shouldn't it apply to this corporation? I don't think there's any public policy reason that we should treat the corporation differently than every citizen in the state of Alaska. Secondly, the Attorney General has stated that because of the silence on the act, it probably applies. In fact, members who have talked here have heard it stated in committee that the Antitrust Act probably applies in the opinion of the Attorney General. This would just make it clear that it does apply to the railroad as it does to any other Alaska corporation.
I think where we'll find out for sure, Mr. President, is I'm sure there'll be a lawsuit over this and the courts will decide. Again, I repeat, it's not necessary. We're putting on an extra layer of regulations. The railroad will already have never been under the federal antitrust laws before, but with the transfer into state ownership, those antitrust laws will all come into play, and I just don't think this is necessary.
Larson.
Do you have a brief at ease, Mr. President?
Be at ease. Senate, please come back to order. Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's been stated that every other Alaskan competitor...
You have the floor, Senator. Please proceed.
It's been stated that every other Alaskan business has to deal with the State Antitrust Act. In reading the sections referred to here, it also includes the exemption section 4555-72. And under the exemptions, we find that the Act does not apply to carriers regulated under 4210, 4215. 4210 is the Motor Carrier Act. They are not under the State Antitrust Act.
Well, as not as the author of that legislation, those amendments I had to accept at the time, I remember them well. Question is, shall the amendment be adopted? You proceed to vote. All members voted. I don't believe all members have voted, have they? All members on the floor voted. Secretary, close the roll. Any member desire to change their vote? Secretary, close the roll.
The roll shows 13 yeas, 3 nays. 3 yeas, 13 nays.
Next item on the daily. Next item, Amendment 9.
There is an Amendment number 9.
Yes, Senator.
Are we under a call or not?
No.
No, the call had
just
been...
Just on that specific thing
Thank
that was
Thank
you
very called. Much, Senator.
Thank you.
You may call it again. Call was relieved. We shall soon be. Next item on the daily calendar is item 9. Amendment 9, you have floor, Senator Fisher.
President, there was a mistake in Amendment 9. It's a version 9A that I believe everyone has.
You're withdrawing 9?
I'd like to withdraw 9, ask unanimous consent.
No objection.
And instead would like to move 9A.
9A is before us, Senator.
Mr. President, 9A expands the second sentence of the existing language and changes it somewhat. It says a corporation shall authorize a walkway and trail if the board first finds in writing the proposed trail and so on will not create a safety hazard and will not unreasonably interfere with continued and expanded operation of utility corridors, and then adds a new subsection 1, which provides that the permittee, the municipality, agrees to whatever restrictions, limitations, and conditions are appropriate. I believe this strikes a fair balance between the granting of permits for walkways and trails and the railroad's interest in protecting railroad utility corridors and other property and other parts of their lands against unreasonable hazard and interference, and I ask unanimous consent.
Objections noted.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think this amendment does strike a reasonable balance. It protects the railroad and provides the board the opportunity to deny the request if they find that it's unsafe or it's an unreasonable interference, but I think it's a rewrite of the section that doesn't do any harm to the bill.
Under 8.
Well, I think there is one problem here in the third line.
First page,
third line. It makes it mandatory that the corporation shall authorize a walkway, and I think perhaps if even though it's subject to the AS 4240, it still says the corporation shall if it's subject to that, and perhaps you should just make it permissive mandatory.
Yeah. Yep, Senator.
I believe in the second line, the may makes it very clear that the this is permissive, and the shall is subject to the if in the next on the next line, if the board makes a finding, so that if the board doesn't make that finding, it's not mandatory.
Under 8?
2240-350 through the chair, is that that has to do with the corporate board of the railroad?
No, Mr. President.
That deals with the width of a right-of-way and it shall be 100 feet and so on.
Senator Paul Fisher.
Yes, Mr. President, just for clarification, when we talk about public purposes, plural, are we just talking about walkways and trails, or are we also including possible down the road leasing of railroad property for other purposes, such as subleasing to the university, et cetera, et cetera?
Senator Victor Fisher, do you wish to respond?
Mr. President, I did not rewrite that language. My assumption would be that it could be for placement of an armory or for gravel pit or any other public purpose.
The floor, Senator.
Mr. President, I might note that this says 4240.430. Are we eliminating acquisition of government property and replacing it with this?
Senator Fisher, do you wish to respond?
Mr. President, not at all. This provision is subject to 4240.350B, so we're not changing 350B whatsoever.
My point is this. It says delete and replace with 4240.430. Line 27 on page 24 says 42.40.430 says acquisition of government property.
Another drafting mistake. Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that on the first line of the amendment, the 430 be changed to 420. That is correct. It should be 420.
Objections noted. drafting mistake. I think the notation will be made. Senator Paul Fisher has
just one further question, I guess, for clarification. We had just addressed eminent domain. Is there anything that would preclude the railroad from taking land under eminent domain but using it for uses such as public purposes?
You have the floor, Senator.
That was why I amended, asked the Senate to amend, and the Senate did amend Amendment Number 5, so that the eminent domain power is limited to transportation purposes only.
Senator Fisher.
Mr. President, I renew my unanimous consent request.
No objection. Amendments adopted. Are there further amendments?
There is an Amendment Number 10 by Senator Kelly on page 48, line 29, delete Ship Creek, insert Birchwood.
Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, I move the amendment.
Can we speak to the amendment?
Mr. President, a few miles up the line from Ship Creek is a residential community known as Birchwood. We've been getting some complaints out of the area on the same vibration problem that they've been getting in Inlet View and Bootleggers Cove. And I'd just as soon have this area included in the study that's going to be done in any case.
Yield floor, Senator.
If the chair will grant me latitude, I'd like to make a statement on the question of speeds of gravel trains, which will explain why I'm not offering an amendment under second read. But I need to do this for the record at some point, and this amendment is
all right, you may speak.
Mr. President, the senator from Birchwood, Eagle River, I and Senator Fisher have heard about complaints regarding the speed of gravel trains, and we had thought about seeking an amendment on the floor and in the Finance Committee to provide that the Municipal Assembly of Anchorage could regulate the speed of trains. We have not done so because our analysis has been that nothing prohibits the Assembly from doing that. Municipal code does not prohibit it. The Constitution of Alaska provides for a strong local government and especially home rule charter powers. Nothing in the Anchorage Municipal Charter forbids it, and nothing in state law forbids it, and nothing in Senate Bill 512 or House Bill 512 forbids it. Leading text on this subject, or one of the leading texts on legal subjects, is Corpus Juris Secundum, which in Section 431 under Railroad says that the municipal power to regulate speeds of trains may be derived from express charter or statutory provisions or implied from other powers granted, such as general clauses of a municipal charter. And furthermore, that power, Mr. President, may be exercised as long as the municipal regulations as to the speed of trains are reasonable. Courts which set aside municipal regulations governing speed of trains generally do so because the speed has been found to be unreasonable. I talked to Bill Loftus of the federal government, the Federal Railway Agency, who says that, as far as he knows, there's no federal proscription against the municipality of Anchorage setting railroad speed limits within its boundaries as long as they do not say that the train cannot run. As long as they don't prohibit the trains from carrying on their mission, reasonable speed limits may be set. And finally, Mr. President, there are cases to this effect. Just one of the cases that I found, Thompson against St. Louis San Francisco Railway Company, a Missouri case, involved a speed limit set by the city of Springfield, Missouri. The court there, and I'm reading from the head notes, said that the legislative body of the municipality is the primary judge of the necessity or reasonableness of speed regulation of railroad trains operating through the city, and the presumption favors validity of such ordinances, and that only where it is clearly shown that ordinance regulating speed of railroad trains through the city is unreasonable and arbitrary will the court so declare. Finally, there was a question raised as to whether or not the municipality might incur liability if it set a speed limit. According to my conversation with Mr. Wurzbauer, that would not occur any more than the city would be liable if it posed a speed limit on a road. For these reasons, Mr. President, I find that it is not necessary for the state senate or house to address the issue by amending 512.
Thank you.
Mr. President, speaking to that point, I'm assuming you're allowing wide latitude on the debate on this amendment.
Particularly if we'll be brief.
I cannot. Well, he wasn't brief. All right. When my friend from downtown Anchorage and I were locked in this debate over railroad speeds, and I was into calling 15 states and getting all of this, I couldn't, and we were looking up law cases, each one of us. He'd look up one, I'd look up one, he'd find one, and I'd find one. The best one I found, though, and I've got to relate this, the best one I found is in Michigan, in Lansing, Michigan. A guy lives 25 feet from the railroad tracks, and the freight trains go by at 80 miles an hour, and he lost.
Yeah, the floor is under Kelly. 80 miles from Birchwood to Shipcreek, I guess.
Yep, Mr. President, I hope that nobody thinks the last two speakers had anything to do with the merits of this particular amendment. There is going to be a vibration study. I would just assume that Birchwood would be included in it.
No objection. Is there objection to the amendment? Amendment's adopted. Just down the track. Further amendments?
There are no other amendments.
Sundry.
Yes. Amendments. I would move the Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 512 Finances amended be advanced to the third reading and placed on the passage.
Objection. So ordered. Fifth day, read the bill in third reading.
Senate CS for House Bill number 512, Finance Amended Senate, an act establishing the Alaska Railroad Corporation to manage and operate the Alaska Railroad and providing for an effective date.
Bill is before you for discussion and debate. You have the floor.
Mr. President, I would have to at this time thank the co-chairman of Finance who helped put a series of state government oversight provisions in this bill. And hopefully, through his work and a combination of other people's work, we will be getting good information, accurate information from this railroad, and we can protect both the money that we're giving to the railroad and the asset that the people of the state of Alaska are buying. Just to go over a little bit of the asset of the oversights that are in the bill. Two commissioners remain on the board, so that's the connection back. An annual report is required to the governor and the legislature describing the operations and the financial condition of the corporation. Annual financial records are audited by an independent certified public accountant experienced in railroad accounting. An annual performance audit, and I think this is very important, is required to be conducted by someone recognized in railroad management. The corporation is required to make available to both the Legislative Audit Division and the governor's auditors all the information of the railroad. A state oversight report is required before the corporation undertakes any activities which would alter services provided by the railroad. Also, specific legislative approval is required by law for any conveyance of the corporation's entire interest in the land, so they're not going to be selling the land. Any issuance of bonding, major extensions of the rail line, leasing of the land of over 35 years, or any specific long-term changes in the assets of the railroad. The railroad is required to prepare a long-range capital improvement and program plan. The plan is required to be submitted every 5 years and updated every year for both the governor and the legislature. Specific legislative approval will be required for any conveyance of state land to the railroad if the eminent domain goes. The Department of Administration may participate in labor negotiations. A railroad labor relations agency appointed by the governor is there to oversee any labor disputes. Notice of any legal action by the corporation is required to be given to the Department of Law, and any suits against the state of Alaska has to be involving the Department of Law, and the governor may force the sale of the railroad. So I think there are lots and lots of oversight provisions. I hope they work. We tried to make it so that they will work, and the idea is to get as much information back to the legislature and the governor's office as possible.
We have 1 second for the meeting. Senate, please come back to order. Senator Ray.
Well, Mr. President, before we have this vote, I'd just like to make a comment, just a brief comment that but looking at this as a House bill and remembering the 2 years that I spent on the Transportation Committee and all the, it was your original bill that went in 2 or 3 years ago, and all of the work has been done by the members of this of this Senate and the finance people and some of the other people here and the various committees, and this seems almost a shame that this is a House bill, and I don't think that it is, because it's a Senate committee substitute. And hopefully the people could understand this really isn't a House bill. It's the Senate version of what the railroad should be.
Thank you, Mr. President. Regardless of whose it is, I think it's a good bill. It does place the railroad under the direct control of the governor. The governor, of course, appoints the board members. The governor can hire and fire them at his will. And I would just add that if the railroad is too noisy or too fast or too slow or too expensive, the governor's number is 465-3500, and anyone out there should feel free to call him directly.
Just one brief comment, Mr. President. I would certainly like to the Senate Transportation Chairman to thank all of those people from the governor's office all the way down to the people who are employees of the railroad, the federal people, and all the people that have been involved in this. And something that you fellows started years ago, I think we're going to see come to fruition today, and I'm damn proud of it.
Of all the people who aren't, it's going to shake their house. I move the letter of intent, too, Mr. President.
Letter of intent. Consent. You can ask consent. Question. Ready for the question? The question is, shall the House Bill 512 as amended by the Senate be adopted? You may proceed. All members have voted that are here. All members voted. Does any member wish to change their vote? Secretary, close the vote.
The roll shows 20 yeas.
Senator Ray.
Move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 512 Finance be considered the roll call on Section 12 of the effective date clause.
No objection.
I move that the roll call on Senate Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute for House Bill 512 Finance be considered the roll call and effective date clause in Section 12.
It's adopted.
But, well, or Section 13, excuse me.
Yes.
12 and 13.
Yes. Yep, floor, Senator.
Mr. President, there's only one effective date. The other effective date section was deleted by one of the amendments.
Roll call. The roll call on the passage of the bill will be the roll call on effective date clauses. At this time, at the bottom of the calendar was placed a bill, Secretary of the Senate. There are two bills.
House Bill number 299 by Representatives Abood, Clarkson, Ewling, and Hurlburt, an act relating to public records.
Senator Ray.
Mr. President, this is the bill that was in question that we're going to attempt to change the title.
Yep.
So I would move that for the adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute in lieu of the original House bill.
Without objection.
Senate CS for House Bill number 299, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee, an act defining sexual contact and sexual penetration.
Bill is before you. It's in second reading. It's taken up this morning. There are amendments, I understand. Senator Halper.
Mr. President, I have an amendment drafted which places an immediate effective date on the bill, but before I offer that, I would want to ask the question. If the bill passes with an immediate effective date, does that deal with cases that are currently in court, or how does that actually apply?
You have the floor, Senator Page John.
Well, Mr. President, the cases that are currently in court are operating under the law as it exists prior to whatever this date this bill goes into effect. So in that sense, it will not have an effect. However, there is a sense that it could, in that if there is an appeal pending, and one of the issues on appeal is what is the meaning of the language. What was the legislative intent in these crimes? I suppose if I was an attorney for the state, I would take the letter of intent that will be offered here as and offer that as evidence that the legislature intends now, and this gives some evidence of its prior intent that these crimes be general intent crimes. But that would be something for the court to weigh, and it's up to them to decide whether or not they think this is an expression of legislative intent that would apply to prior law.
Have you moved the amendment? Your floor, Senator.
I'm not sure I understand the answer, but I'll go ahead and move the amendment. I move amendment number one and ask unanimous consent. It places an immediate effective date on the legislation.
Your floor, Senator.
Not because I'm really against the amendment, but I think we might be creating a whole lot more problems if we just withdrew the amendment. And everybody knows when it's going to become effective, you know, down the road, 90 days or whatever. I don't know whether we create more problems by adopting the amendment or not. And I'll battle the wisdom of the majority, but I think we probably will create more problems.
Mr. DeBay? Senator
Kelly? We have a 60-second at ease, please.
Yes, we'll be at ease. Son, please come to order. The question before us is the amendment proposed by Senator Helford. You ready for the question? Question is, shall the amendment be adopted? You may proceed to vote. All members voted. Any member desire to change their vote? I'll change my vote. Senator Ray. Any other member desire to change their vote? Secretary Close.
Roll shows 11 yeas, 9 nays.
Amendments adopted. No further amendments? Yep, floor, Senator.
A couple of questions for possible purpose of amendment.
Yep, floor, Senator.
On page 1, line 19, states, but sexual contact does not include acts that may reasonably be construed to be normal caretaker responsibilities for a child, interactions with a child, or affection for a child. Are we assured that that does not provide any kind of, you might say, an escape for someone who may have a child in his or her care and, in effect, fondles a child or otherwise contacts a child as otherwise discussed, and under the guise of saying, well, this is just affection for the child, or this is normal interaction with the child?
You have the floor, Senator Pettijohn.
Well, Mr. President, Senator's point is well taken. I don't think it's possible, really, to have a bill that is so specific that it eliminates all need for discretion by the prosecutor, by the judge, and by the jury. And those kinds of questions are ones which I don't think our system of justice is incapable of handling through the criminal process, either by a prosecutor talking and examining the case, using his common sense, trying to decide what's normal, what's abnormal, and then the jury and the judge making those decisions in an individual case-by-case basis. I think this gives them the guidelines, and I don't think that it would be used or could be used as a loophole. This language is from a model act adopted in 1982 by a national conference, national commission, and it's the best that the people in the field have been able to come up with.
Senator Ray?
I think that my colleague is proper there and his explanation, and also if a defendant claims that he or she acted from a proper motive, then it's up to the prosecution to prove or disprove that they did. So it's up to, it's really, I think that was the argument that the appeals court presented, if I'm not mistaken, and that's what we're trying to correct. And there's no other way we can correct it that we can think of at this particular time without this type of language.
Of course, Senator.
Just to continue, I was told that this was from model law, but I see that the language we have in the bill version is much better than the language we had in the draft version, which I assume was from that same model. Mr. President, on page 2, line 6, I'm somewhat, again, confounded by language, that terminology, which it's a good provision, but the language states, administering a recognized and lawful form of treatment that is reasonably adapted to promoting the physical health. What do the words reasonably adapted mean? Couldn't we just say the same thing directly, lawful form of treatment to promote the physical health of the person? What are we adding by saying that is reasonably adapted?
Senator Ray, do you wish to respond?
Well, I don't know. That's the state of the art of the drafters, and what it means is you can use a rectal thermometer, a catheter, or something like that, and that's a reasonable treatment. Form of treatment. Suppository.
Mr. President, my question is,
of course, Senator,
what do these words add that wouldn't be covered by a recognized and lawful form of treatment to promote the physical health, because suppositories, thermometer, and everything of that sort would be covered? And I'm just wondering again if the ambiguity of the word reasonably adapted.
Senator, you have the floor.
These words were recommended by the Department of Law, and I think one problem might be that if you simply said a form of treatment that promotes the physical health of the person being treated, then the person using that treatment would have the burden of showing that the child got well from the use. For example, a thermometer was mentioned. I suppose if there was a fever and you use the thermometer to measure the fever, and the fever gets worse and worse and worse, the claim could be made that the child never recovered, and so the use of the thermometer was somehow illegal. I think that may be why the term reasonably adapted, so that you can make the judgment at the time without having the burden of proving down line that this mode was in fact the right mode that made the child well.
I still don't understand what the words reasonably adapted add to that. I mean, they don't seem to make any difference.
Yeah, floor, Senator Penny, John.
Well, Mr. President, I think if you really have to start talking about specifics, and if you want to start talking about specifics, it's a pretty nasty subject. But if you want to talk about ways that things that are purportedly for medical uses, and which, if used in a proper manner, would be not be a subject of prosecution, yet somehow can be abused, and there can be sexual penetration with an object which is purportedly for medical purposes, but it's not, and it's not reasonably adapted to that particular use that is made of an item which, in another manner, in another adaptation, might be proper. Now, you know, I don't want to go any further than that, because it's not a nice subject. But I think I know what I'm talking about.
I will receive, Mr. President, I will receive, but my concern was that reasonably adapted would be exactly the words that would leave it open to abuse. But I will leave it to my learned lawyer friends to...
Are there amendments? Senator Ray?
In the absence of amendments, I would move that Senate Committee substitute for House Bill number 299, Judiciary, which has a change of title, be advanced to third reading and placed on final passage.
Not objection, so ordered. Secretary Reed, bill.
Senate CS for House Bill number 299, Judiciary, amended Senate, an act defining sexual contact and sexual penetration and providing for an effective date.
Bills for discussion, for debate, you, of course.
Mr. President, hopefully the body will bear with me, but because I want to get this on the record, so in cases with some, I'm sure that the tapes will be investigated or looked at. On May 18th, 1984, the Alaska Court of Appeals released its decision in the case of Flink versus State of Alaska, opinion number 370. The court ruled that the cases involving sexual contact require the prosecution to prove that the offender acted with a specific intent to gratify the offender's lust passions or desires, or the lust passions or desires of the child when the offender engaged in the contact. Offenses involving sexual contact should be general intent crimes. This means the prosecution must prove that the offender knowingly did the prohibited acts. If the defendant claims that he or she acted from a proper motive, such as providing medical treatment, then the prosecution at that point must disprove a proper motive beyond a reasonable doubt. This bill accomplishes this goal by amending the definitions of sexual contact and sexual penetration. The amended definition excludes acts which are appropriate parental caretaking behavior or medical treatment. This removes what the court saw as an ambiguity in the current law. If this bill doesn't pass, prosecutors will be forced to prove the motive in the defendant's mind at the time the offender acted, thus making successful prosecution of these offenders almost impossible.
Mr. President.
Senator, you have
on a matter of the letter of intent, I'd like to be clear about one thing. The term caretaker ought not to be restricted to a parent.